The Joint Legislative Committee on the Bridge, investigating the bridge collapse, will come to order. There's a few things that we need to take care of real quickly here, but first, why don't we go through some introductions, and I'll let Representative Leader and the House members go first. We just, this is a new committee, and we just kind of want everybody to know who each other, know everybody. I think everybody knows everybody, but there's staff here that, House members don't know and Senate members don't know, so.
I'm Representative Leader. I'm on the House Transportation Committee.
I'm Abby Mann. I'm the House Transportation Committee Administrator.
I'm Dan Kane, DFL Caucus Research and House.
I'm Susie Maher, the Committee Legislative Assistant to the House Transportation Committee.
Ron Earhart, House Transportation Finance Committee.
Representative Frank Hornstein from Southwest Minneapolis. I serve on the Transportation Finance Committee and chair a subcommittee on transportation policy and transit.
Representative Melissa Hartman from Brooklyn Park, and I represent Northern Brooklyn Park and Southern Coon Rapids.
Shelly Madure from Apple Valley, Burnsville, and I am vice chair of the Transit Policy Committee.
Terry Morrow, Transportation Finance Committee. I represent Hickory County as part of Sibley County.
Representing Neil Peterson from Bloomington, I want to apologize to the committee. I have a meal ticket meeting at 12, and I have to be there, so I'll have to leave early. I apologize.
Well, we don't want to get in between anybody's meal ticket. Matt, maybe you and Corinne can introduce yourselves.
I am Matt Burris with Health Research.
And Corinne Stewart with Health Fiscal Analysis.
Thank you. I'm Steve Murphy. I chair the Transportation Committee in the Senate.
Billy Ball, I'm Committee Administrator for the Senate's Transportation Committee.
Bonnie Berzovsky, Senate Counsel for Transportation.
Senator Jim Carlson from Burnsville and Eagan, I'm Vice Chair of the Transportation Committee.
I'm Scott Bidwell, State Senator, Southwest and Downtown Minneapolis. I'm on the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee and Chair of the Transit Subcommittee.
Senator Keith Langsess, I'm on the Transportation Committee.
And I'm Kathy Saltzman, a State Senator from the Woodbury area and on the Senate Transportation Committee as well.
Michelle Fishbach from Senate District 14 and a member of the Transportation Committee.
And Senator Koch is also a member of the Transportation Committee. Yesterday when we were sending out, or 2 days ago when we sent out the notices, Senator Koch uses a different type of format with her computer and she didn't quite get it. We got it to her this morning. I believe that she's probably in the process of either getting here or hopefully she's parked by now and running across the street, but we expect to see her today too. With that, I'm going to let Representative Leader read what our charge is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, we're here to check about a failure in the system. We're not here to check about the physical failure in the bridge. We're just looking at what MnDOT's been doing and perhaps if they need some changes, what's been done in the past and what's done in the future. But our charge has been, and I may read it, I think, so we don't miss anything. The Senate and House of Representatives, in accordance with the rules of each body, will appoint a joint committee to investigate the collapse of the I-35W bridge. The committee will consist of 8 members of the Senate appointed by the subcommittee or on committees and 8 members of the House appointed by the Speaker. The committee will have a Senate and House co-chair selected by the appropriate or appointing authority. The committee will do a comprehensive review of all decisions potentially relevant to the bridge collapse within the context of MnDOT's general practices relating to bridge inspection and repair. The committee will examine the extent to which the decisions that permitted the I-35W bridge to deteriorate to the point of collapse were similar to those made regarding other bridges, the extent to which other bridges are in peril, and how the bridge maintenance and replacement program must be changed to ensure that no more bridges fall down. The committee is charged with examining the Minnesota Department of Transportation's decision-making in response to bridge inspection reports done over the last 40 years, especially those done since 1990. The committee will conduct its review and make its recommendations to the legislature using an open and public process that provides Minnesotans with assurance that any past practices and policies that have been identified as contributing to the tragedy have been corrected. The committee will also examine MnDOT's response in the aftermath of the disaster and whether the agency is adequately staffed and funded to inspect, maintain, repair, and replace highway bridges. The committee is not intended to duplicate the efforts of the National Transportation Safety Board to identify the physical failures of this particular bridge that caused it to collapse. Mr. Chair, that's our charge.
Thank you, Chair Leader. today on the agenda, and everybody has a copy of that, we have Mr. Nobles, the legislative auditor, that's here today to explain exactly what it is that his organization is going to look at in regards to the bridge. And then we have Mr. Dorgan from MnDOT, who is going to get into some of the particulars about bridge design and what it takes to build bridges and maintain bridges. With that, I'd ask Mr. Nobles, our legislative auditor, and his team to come to the testifying table.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Deborah Parker-Janod, who is the manager of the follow-up evaluation that we're doing to a report we issued in 1997 entitled Highway Spending. As all of you members know, the legislative auditor does evaluations each year after the Legislative Audit Commission goes through a process of topic identification and selection. We did that this year, and we were in the process of conducting eight evaluations at the direction of the Legislative Audit Commission and in response to your interest. And then the bridge collapse occurred, and there was thought given to whether or not the report that we issued in 1997 was relevant to that event, and I think some people felt it was, since we commented in this report on the fact that the state had, back in 1997, a backlog of structurally deficient bridges, and that we had recommended that MnDOT take a more aggressive and comprehensive approach to addressing that issue, particularly through its maintenance program. So the Legislative Audit Commission met several weeks ago and asked us, on top of the other evaluations that we're currently conducting, to do a follow-up and update this report. But it will focus more on bridges this time than the report did in 1997. This report in 1997 covered a wide range of highway and bridge issues. So the update will focus more than the original report on bridges. Ms. Janod will cover in just a moment more specifically what is in the scope of this evaluation. But let me make just a couple of points. Number one, we are going to look at the decision-making process at MnDOT. And so, to some degree, we're going to be covering some of the same ground that this committee is. But our process is quite different. Chairman Leader referred to the fact that you're going to be conducting public hearings. As I think all of you understand and know, our process is quite different. We go and do our evaluation work, and we do not release information or preliminary reports until we're done. Also, typically, in the context of an evaluation, we do not consider ourselves to be investigating the individual actions of people in an organization. But in this case, if we find that individual actions are relevant to the decision-making process in a way that we feel we need that focus, we will do that. Also, typically, in the context of an evaluation, we do not put people under oath. When we conduct an investigation, we do. People are sworn, and again, in the context of doing that, this evaluation, this follow-up, that will not be our practice unless we come upon a situation where we think that is necessary, and if we do, we will. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I should add, because all of you are going to be wondering, when will we be done? We are hoping that we will certainly have this update available to you at the beginning of the legislative session. But we're working a lot of things into our agenda, but certainly to make this relevant and useful to you, the legislature, and to the public, that is our goal. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I might just ask Ms. Janod again, who is going to be managing this follow-up for us, to fill in a few more of the details of what is going to be in the scope of this evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Junot, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Fair. Members, good morning. I'm Deb Junot with OLA. Each of you, I think, received in your packet a project description for our evaluation that lays out the key research questions that we intend to address and some of the methods that we plan to use. And I'll just run through the key things for you briefly, and then if you have any additional questions, I can talk to you about what we're doing, but not about what we've already started to find or any of our preliminary findings right now. So first, we intend to update the 1997 report with trend information on transportation finance data and also data on the condition of the state highway and bridge system. On the finance side, that will include presenting data on state and federal funding and also MnDOT expenditures by category. We do intend to drill down into construction spending, particularly, if we can, breaking down preventive maintenance spending, spending on other maintenance, bridge reconstruction, and new construction, and try to lay out what's been going on with those data over time, both for bridges and highways. That analysis also will include trend data on staffing at MnDOT, and also, to the extent that we can, use of contractors versus state employees. We also plan to present and analyze data on various measures of highway pavement condition and bridge condition over time. And included there, we'll also discuss the bridge inspection program itself and any major changes in resources, practices, or regulation that would put information about bridge inspection in context. Wrapping around that, we plan to also then discuss factors that influence those trends. What are some of the issues with federal funding availability, state funding, what's been going on with inflation and in construction materials, the cost of construction materials. The second major area of inquiry for us will be decision making. That is, how does MnDOT decide what projects to do and when? And how has that process changed or not over the last 10 years or so? Again, we'll be looking at the context of that decision making. What's going on with federal transportation programs? What's going on with the availability of state funding? How do MnDOT's strategic priorities influence and fit into decision making process? As part of that, we plan to do an extensive amount of interviewing throughout MnDOT that would include staff and managers in the district, in the bridge office, the materials division at MnDOT, finance, investment management, from the executive down to unit leaders and supervisors who are involved. We also plan to do a specific set of work that with a case study approach. We have it selected, what group of bridges will be included in this part of our inquiry, but we do plan to choose a group of bridges and then follow action on those bridges over time. The 35W bridge would be included in that group. And our interest there is looking at, for example, if we select a group of bridges that in 1998 were identified as deficient, what happened to the bridge condition over time for those bridges? What kind of maintenance work was done? If scheduled, which bridges were scheduled for maintenance, which weren't? Were there changes accelerating or postponing action on those bridges? Again, what was the reasoning behind any decisions on what to do and when? And we hope that that will give us a real rich sense of how this decision-making process on what goes into the bridge program, how that process works. And finally, we have one other research question that we've been asked to address, and that's what goes into MnDOT's process for projecting future needs? In our 1997 report, we made some specific recommendations about that strategic planning process, so we will look specifically at how they've responded to those recommendations, and then again, overall, try to get a sense of how do they project future needs, how far out are those projections reliable, where might they begin to get a little more fuzzy, those kinds of issues. So It's a pretty big agenda. As Mr. Noble said, though, we do plan on finishing our work and getting a report to you by the beginning of the session. Ms. Hatt, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you, Ms. Janad. One thing that I'd like to put on the radar, or maybe just ask if you're going to look at it, but there's been all this information about available technology when it comes to bridge sensors and things like that. Is that also going to be part of your scope to look at those kind of emerging technologies to help us with bridge maintenance?
Mr. Chair, as part of our overview of the inspection process, we will talk to MnDOT and district staff about how they do inspections, the kinds of techniques that they use, what do they use predominantly, what's available to them. We won't be doing a technical analysis that we get to should Minnesota be using more of those techniques, in what circumstances would they be used, not in great depth, but we will talk about what they do, what's available, and if there are technologies that aren't currently being used extensively, what's the rationale behind that.
All right, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Janard or Mr. Nobles, could you just define more clearly, and probably a short thing, it looks like we could have some not overlap or duplication. Could you just define the differences in roles? I think one of the things is that you can sometimes obtain information more quickly than we can, or how could you define that for the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, well, the first thing I'd again emphasize is that you're going to be holding public hearings, and we are not. Our process is frankly done, if you want to say, behind closed doors. We don't issue information or hold public hearings of any kind or issue press statements until we are done, and we have a significant protocol around our work in that the agency that is being examined under our standards has an opportunity to review a draft, comment to us before the final report is released, and also to include a comment on the report. If you look at our 1997 report, for example, you will see the Commissioner of Transportation responded to that report and generally agreed with our findings and recommendations. So that's one part of our process that I think is significantly different than yours. But to the question of access to data, the legislative auditor does have very significant statutory authority to see all data of any classification. The legislative auditor also has subpoena power. I do not anticipate using that in this evaluation, but it's available if it's needed, and if it's needed, we will use it. So I don't know if I've covered everything that will be different. We will be doing a lot of interviewing of people one-on-one, again, in private. We will try to explore with them the whole chain of events and decision-making. As Ms. Janad said, we will try to identify all the relevant facts, people that were involved. And from all of that, we will develop findings and conclusions and make recommendations. So I think those are the significant differences between the process that you're going to follow and the one that we follow.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Representative Morrow, then Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Nobles, that's very helpful to me because I think we want to be very clear that this committee is not examining the causes of the physical failure of the bridge, and it sounds like you are not doing that either. What this committee is trying to do is to look into the past, look at the decision-making, look at the policies within MnDOT that may have had a causal relationship with the collapse of the bridge so that we can move forward. It sounds like you're looking at decision-making as well. You have some greater tools or some different tools, perhaps, and you're looking at maybe a wider breadth. I wonder if you could also talk about what levels of employees you'll be talking with.
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, I don't think we said it maybe quite explicitly, but I'm glad you did, that we are not, as this committee, we are not trying to do a forensic examination of the structure of the bridge and determine, as the NTSB will, why it collapsed. We will interview anyone in the department that we think is relevant to the decision-making, from the commissioner, everybody on down the chain of decision making. And in doing an evaluation or an investigation, one of the important things to do is to lay out a decision-making map, so to speak, so that you know all of the people that were involved, the events that occurred, and so you can probe what was the relevant data that people had who were in a decision-making process at particular events. So we will try to talk to all of the people who were relevant to that decision-making.
Representative Morrow. So one thing that your office has hoped to produce is a decision-making map within MnDOT related to bridges and highways.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. And we, again, are trying to lay out the context of the normal process. And we certainly expect, and knowing MnDOT, as we have over the years, they have a routine process. It's a very a systematic organization. And we will certainly want to examine that. But we will also pursue any aberrations from the norm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Salton.
I guess back to your point, Mr. Chair, earlier, just briefly, during the roundtable that we had with you earlier about this study, not to get into great depth about all these new techniques and, I guess, technologies, but will you be looking at, was there even consideration given to some of the other inspection and monitoring techniques that are there? And if they were not used, was there a reason why? Was it because of lack of knowledge, or was it because of lack of dollars? Will that be considered at all as part of the decision-making on how we inspect bridges?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, yes. We'll look at all aspects of the inspection, particularly in that case study group. I think that's where we'll be able to dig more into the details of what went on specifically with each of those bridges in order to tell a story about what went on. And then we can speak more generally about the tools and techniques that are normally used in routine inspections and also for some of the specialized groups of inspections that may not have.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. I'm curious, what I'm most curious about is whether or not the legislative auditor's inquiry or our inquiry is able to really take a measure of the prevailing culture that surrounds the decisions that are made inside of MnDOT. It will be fairly easy to examine the decision-making process, the professional criteria, those sorts of things. Those should be, you know, I could probably recite some of those because we've had those presented to us in committee. My question is really maybe a little more qualitative, though I'm guessing we can maybe figure out through some probing and investigation whether or not, for example, the professional staff is bringing forward their best ideas, or if they feel constrained from doing that because there's an ethic or a culture that puts a priority, you know, whether that's communicated clearly or that's implied around fiscal restraint, for example, or, you know, making sure that there are other kinds of considerations that maybe not even make it on the paper but are communicated in other ways. Do you understand my question? Is this inquiry able to measure, you know, whether it's prevailing policy directives or general political trends or, you know, some of those more qualitative, hard to nail down, not necessarily on a piece of paper, but may be a huge factor influencing whether or not even the best ideas are advanced in decision-making meetings.
Mr. Noble.
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, Senator Dibble. As an organization that has evaluated a lot of other organizations and a lot of other decision-making processes, we're certainly aware that personalities and of both individuals and of organizations play a big part in the decision-making process. So we need to be very attuned to that, and I think we would certainly apply a best practice standard that all relevant information needs to be brought to the table and considered by decision makers. And if we determine that there is any part of the culture, the decision-making culture or personality at MnDOT that has inhibited people from bringing forth data and information, that would be very important for us to know and to comment on. It's always a matter of the magnitude, and again, we will be sensitive to that. sort of back to one of Representative Leader's questions, though, and I think it's relevant here. One of the things that we can do by doing this in a more private way than public hearings is, I think, frankly, we can get people to speak more frankly. We also can offer confidentiality to people. We do that very carefully because we want to be able to accumulate a body of evidence that can be examined publicly. But we tell people quite explicitly when we're interviewing them one-on-one that if they need a protection of confidentiality, and this goes beyond whistleblower protection, this is protecting their identity, not just protecting them from some adverse consequence. Again, we would prefer that people speak to us openly on the record so we can use that evidence. But sometimes people have things to say that are quite sensitive, they're in a vulnerable position, and if they give us a lead, they give us an indication of a problem, we can pursue it in other ways and possibly find public documentation and won't need to use a quote from an individual. So I hope that answers your question, Senator.
Further questions for Mr. Nobles. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Nobles and Ms. Trinad, one of the things that I keep thinking, and I do hear what you're talking about with examining the techniques available for inspection, and I guess what I'd like to know is if you're going to conclude how our state-of-the-art in Minnesota matches with the state-of-the-art used in other states, and that might be something that is on a scale of, you know, leading edge or leading, keeping up, lagging, or woefully behind, so that we can find out just where we sit, because that often relates to how much we want to invest in this technology.
Mr. Chairman and members, you know, we will certainly talk to people who are experts, and again, that's a normal part of what we do and a necessary part, because we want to use every bit of information that's available to us from people who spend every day, all day, thinking about the topics that we are addressing in an ad hoc evaluation. So we will talk to experts about what the current technology is and how they might measure where Minnesota is in utilizing that technology. However, I think we do need to be cautious that we always keep in mind that we may be making a judgment about events that occurred 10 years ago, and technology that is available today obviously may not have been available then. So we have to be careful that we're setting a fair standard for what technology should have been used at the time.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering as well, this is related to my previous question, again, taking the temperature of the agency, something that's been expressed in a lot of meetings in recent years at the Transportation Committee and in private meetings and in other areas. There's a general concern about the morale at the department, the number of professional staff that have left, a lot of speculation about whether or not that's true, whether or not that's attributable to particular causes. Again, hard to measure in a quantitative sense, but it's more of a qualitative measure. Is it possible within this inquiry to take a measure of morale, take a measure of turnover, find those causes, figure out if that's attributable, you know, if anything you see in the maintenance of the system or the collapse of this bridge is related to those factors? And an additional question, are you going to be speaking with folks who have left the agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, yes, we will be speaking with staff that have left the agency. And by the time my team is finished with this evaluation, we will have interviewed dozens and dozens of individuals from all different levels of the organization. And I can say, as it often does in these kinds of evaluations, those issues about morale, the tone within the department, they will come out of those interviews, and we will summarize and synthesize that information that we get from all different points of view within the organization. So yes, I think we will be addressing and hearing from people about those issues that you're speaking with. Specifically with staffing and turnover, yes, we do plan to obtain information about staff levels, in particular parts of the organization that are very relevant to the work that we're doing, and we will talk about resource and staffing issues within those areas, including as much data analysis of actual data that we can get.
Representative Fortman.
Thank you. Just real quickly, I don't know if you're planning to look at this, but one thing I'd be interested in is what their salary was when they were at MnDOT and what their salary was when they left, because I'm interested in knowing whether we have the funding and we have a salary schedule to keep competent professionals in MnDOT in all of our departments.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Janad. Mr. Nobles, there's been correspondence between your office and Representative Hornstein and Senator Dibble in regards to a series of questions that I believe that your committee would like to get answers to. And in your response, you said that basically some of those questions are going to be answered and some not. Can you kind of give us an overview of the things that you are not going to look at?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes. And I doubt some of you had that in front of you, and I will recall as best I can from my recollection, although I do have that correspondence in my file if you want something more specific. I was asked to address questions such as whether or not it was appropriate for the Lieutenant Governor to also be the Commissioner of Transportation, and the possibility that inhibited the Governor in some way, and specifically asked to inquire as to whether or not the Governor had asked the Lieutenant Governor to resign as Commissioner of Transportation. Those questions, I thought, were not appropriately within my purview. However, as I said before, also in answer to Senator Dibble, that to the degree that the commissioner is present in decision-making, we will take that into account. I don't know that we will take into account that she is, in fact, the lieutenant governor as well, unless that becomes relevant in some way. So I think we will pursue questions as they become relevant to the decision-making process. But we will not formulate questions at the beginning as those posed by Senator Dibble, such as those I just referenced. Again, I'm recalling from memory, but I felt that there were some questions posed to me that could better be handled by a legislative committee and specifically by the committee that has authority to confirm the Lieutenant Governor as Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Noble, your evaluation questions, as I look at the first question, it seems to me that there's that goes beyond MnDOT. So if you're examining that question, what factors influence these trends, you don't have to go beyond MnDOT.
Mr. Chairman, members, we would agree that MnDOT is not in control of the whole world. Many things affect their work, growth, the issues of the number of cars we drive and where we drive them. And so, I mean, we will be looking at economic and demographic trends, as Ms. Janad said, things such as inflation in construction materials. So what we will look at are those factors and how MnDOT has responded to them and make some judgment as to whether or not we think they've responded adequately. But indeed, I think we would be remiss if we were not taking into consideration factors that MnDOT, that go beyond MnDOT.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Davis, I think there are also some policy decisions as well in that first question that may have an outcome that we should look at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, if I could just elaborate, that context is important. We don't plan on just laying tables of numbers out in front of the legislature. It's important to understand how they should be interpreted and what some of the factors are, the context that go around those trends, and that's an important part of what we do.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Denod.
Thank you.
If we could have Mr. Dorgan, the state bridge engineer, and his team next.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
I have a question, or I guess I want to make a suggestion about requests for documents. I have a request myself for documents from MnDOT, and my request would be that as a committee, whenever any of us individually have a request, that the documents be provided to the chairs of the committee and then to all the members so that they're clear on what we're asking for and we're all seeing the same information. And then my request, just to put out there for MnDOT, is that any document requests that they receive in litigation, where they produce documents or information in response to litigation, that they also provide copies to this committee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Dorgan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Dan Dorgan. I'm the state bridge engineer for MnDOT. And also with me today is Todd Neiman. Todd is our structural metals engineer and our bridge inspection engineer. So I've asked Todd to accompany me today to help answer some of the questions that you may have. The information we were given a couple days ago when this hearing was scheduled was that the committee desired to hold a hearing on understanding bridge engineering with sort of a general overview of bridge inspection practices. So that was our intent today. We will try to cover those subjects. So we intend to go through the state and federal requirements for inspection, inspector training, what those requirements would be, how that inspection program has changed over the last 20 years, and also how we address inspection results and critical findings, and lastly, technology used in inspection. So hopefully that captures what the committee was looking for, and certainly we'll attempt to answer any other questions that you may have. We did include a handout that you should have also that is a summary of our state bridge inspection effort, or actually it's one of the daily summaries. It's dated October 2nd, and these would be the special inspections that MnDOT has embarked on since August 1st. I did not intend to go into that in detail. I just wanted to show you that document. It's also on our website, and the web address is up there. And generally, we're again updating that usually daily, or at least several times a week. We've also included two other items that may be of interest. One is bridge inspection definitions. It's sort of a glossary of different terms that are used regarding bridges. We hope that will be helpful to you. And lastly, and depending where the questions go today, we have some photos of different bridge types, but I guess we'll utilize those if we need to perhaps explain a response to a question. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to begin on the various areas we intend to cover regarding bridge inspection, and the first of those is the state requirements for bridge inspection. And actually, a lot of this is laid out in state statutes that all bridges in Minnesota will be inspected annually unless the commissioner approves a two-year inspection. And there is a program in place how an owner can, for a new bridge or one in good condition, we approve a two-year inspection cycle. So that's the frequency of inspection. The roadway owner themselves is the entity responsible for the inspection. So MnDOT is responsible for inspecting all bridges over the trunk highway system or that carry the trunk highway system. Counties would be responsible for local road bridges. And in addition to that, we do underwater inspections and fracture critical inspections. Those are centralized. MnDOT, whether it's a state bridge or local bridge, MnDOT oversees that program. For the underwater inspection, we retain consultants to do that and to meet the frequency requirements of the federal National Bridge Inspection System standards. So those inspections, are conducted with central oversight. And the fracture critical bridges throughout the state are inspected, whether they're on the state system or local system, are inspected by MnDOT.
Those are all reported. Those inspections are reported to particularly locals once a year to the department, and we track that as a database within our department. If it's an inspection or a question, rather. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Durgan, I actually have a couple. Do all the inspectors, whether they're at the local level or state inspectors, do they all use the same criteria?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the same criteria and system for inspection is used, and that's actually dictated by the National Bridge Inspection Standards that we follow. So we are all, whether we work for MnDOT or work for the county, we're trained under the same system. The classes you take are the same, and so that would be the same standard for inspection.
So, Mr. Dorgan, there is a certification process. You have to be a certified bridge inspector to be able to sign off the appropriate documents. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct, and I was going to be moving into that next, but I can certainly address it now.
I'm sorry. Representative Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, at the beginning you said the state requirements are that all bridges are inspected annually unless something, and then it's every 2 years, and I just missed the something.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, the requirement in state statute is an annual inspection unless it's approved by, in the way the statute reads, approved by the commissioner for a two-year inspection cycle. And so what we've laid out then for bridges, you know, obviously new bridges or bridges in good condition, a county can request to put those on a two-year cycle. As long as the condition ratings are at a certain level, we approve that for a two-year cycle. If the bridge ever drops below to a lower condition rating, then, and certainly this, you know, commonly occurs as bridges age, they would go back to the one-year cycle at that point.
Just to follow up then, Mr. Chair, and if it's annually unless approved by the commissioner, does the commissioner make a bridge-by-bridge determination of whether this bridge will be inspected annually or every 2 years, or is it on categories? Now, what you said seems to indicate categories, and I'm wondering if the actual commissioner has determined which categories are every 2 years or if it's somebody on the commissioner's staff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and actually the determination is made by the bridge office. So when a county, and I'll just take an example, when a county determines that they have five bridges that are fairly new condition, or are fairly new in excellent condition, they would send that list of bridges in. We would then go through the inspection reports to look at the condition of those bridges and either approve or disapprove for those to go on a two-year cycle. And we would do the same thing then when our MnDOT districts ask for their bridges. So that's all done, and it's actually staff that reports to me that does that. I sign the letters, but they go through the analysis and approval of that.
Another follow-up. For example, with the 35W bridge, was that one, I understand, was on annual inspections because of its condition, and I'm wondering who made the determination that it would be on annual inspection. Would that be... I'm trying to get some sense of understanding the staff and sort of the hierarchy and who makes what decisions. And so would that be you because is your title Chief Bridge Engineer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yes, I'm the title of State Bridge Engineer. In 1993 was the year that the 35W bridge went to annual inspection. I was not the State Bridge Engineer at the time. My predecessor would have been Bridge Engineer, so I can't speak to the details of what happened that day or that decision, but I assume they would have used the same criteria that we're currently using. It would have been condition driven. The bridge at that point would have been not quite 30 years old. I guess it would have been 27, 28 years old, I believe. And for whatever reasons, the condition had, and actually at that point, it did become structurally deficient also. So that would have been one of the triggers for us to go to an annual inspection on it.
Sorry, I just have another follow-up. So what you were saying with regard to the MnDOT-owned bridges, so the ones on the trunk highway system, the state bridge engineer would be the one to decide whether it's annual or every other year. But you said that when the counties have bridges, then that is the bridge office makes that determination. Is there somebody else in the bridge office that makes that determination for county bridges, sort of like your counterpart except for with regard to county bridges?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, it's actually the same group. We ha- and I'm sorry I did not bring that criteria with us today, but we do have criteria what... Oh, okay. Okay, there's an actual... Mr. Neiman just informed me. There's a guideline for bridge inspection frequency, a technical memorandum that we do follow. So when those requests would come in from either our counties or our district, my staff would look at that and determine which ones were approved for a two-year cycle versus which ones needed to remain at a one-year cycle. And then we would respond to either the district or the county, whoever it might be, and approve that. And it's based upon that criteria that's established.
My final follow-up would be, is that an individual that makes that determination, or is it a set group of individuals who decide whether a bridge should be on annual or every 2 years?
I'm Todd Neiman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's based on whether or not it meets the criteria established in the techno memorandum.
Right, I understand that. What I'm wondering is when a county, say for example, a county bridge is sent into you, condition is good, right? And that automatically stays on a every 2 year cycle. Who signs off on that? A person or a committee?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the actual, when we send the response letter, I sign that. The state bridge engineer signs the response letter that your request has been approved for the cycle that whatever had been requested. So I sign the letter, but it's my staff that would actually pull the files, look at the bridge, compare it to the criteria that's established, and then draft a letter and present it to me to say, we've gone through these are the ones we approved for, that meet the criteria and they're approved for that cycle. And then I would sign that letter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who on your staff? I want to know who makes the decision about how often the bridges should be inspected. Is it engineers? Is it...
It's actually, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our bridge management unit that's headed by James Pierce actually looks at those, goes through the criteria. They forward it to Gary Peterson, our bridge construction and maintenance engineer, and then it's presented to me for signature.
Thank you.
So there's several, Mr. Dorgan, there's several levels that these have to go through before they're put on either list, either the two-year list or the one-year list. And if they meet the criteria, it sounds like the group passes along those bridges that have met the criteria as far as being good, and then they're put on one list, but not after they go through several series of oversight, yourself being the final. And then the other set of bridges that have some sort of deficiency, they go through a different process. But inevitably, you sign off on either more inspections or less inspections.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, ultimately I sign off on those approval letters.
Mm-hmm.
But realize all bridges are on a one-year cycle unless they can meet the criteria
right.
to be on a two-year cycle.
Right. Representative Leader and then Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorgan, also, I think, I don't know if you're going to get in it, but actually if you have one that's structurally deficient or critical, you actually have more than an annual inspection. There are more of them. You actually go through the process rather than annually. It can be weekly or daily darn near too on something. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, I'm not aware of any that we would do daily. You know, if it was that critical, we would take some other action rather than inspect it. But you're certainly right. There are times when we put a bridge on a inspection cycle shorter than a year. In the past, that's usually been when something's near the end of its life, our replacement is scheduled. But for whatever reasons, we deem it critical enough in condition that we need to inspect more frequently.
And Mr. Durkin, how many of those bridges do we have out there that are being inspected more often than on a yearly basis?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would say it's actually a fairly rare occurrence when it has declined to that condition that we need to go on a shorter cycle than 1 year. And at the moment, I can't recall one. You know, I recall it in past bridges that we've since replaced that were inspected on a more frequent schedule. The Hudson Bridge over the St. Croix, the old truss, was inspected quite frequently for that structure. The Lexington Avenue 35E bridge was inspected on a six-month cycle. Here it's in its final years. Mm-hmm. But Brad, unless you recollect, I can't do anything on a shorter cycle at the moment.
It's quite rare. Unless there's some conditions of bridges that are subject to high loads being hit that are monitored somewhat more frequently by the bridge owner, whether or not it's the district or the county or something, or bridges that are subject to scour during heavy rain situations for flooding, that will be monitored as a special circumstance after some type of event like that. But other than that, it's not very typical.
Mm-hmm. So right now we don't have any bridges in that category?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there may be one on the county system that a local owner is inspecting more frequently. I'm sorry, I'm just not aware of it at this time.
All right, thank you. Senator Carlson and Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, just had a definitional, just a follow-up quick definition.
Okay.
Mr. Freeman, when you say subject to scour, you mean erosion under the, the pilings or the...
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, let me just call out that we're in a highly technical field that we're discussing, and we have the public watching as well, so if we can try to use lay English to the extent possible. Thanks.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dorgan, you mentioned that the owner of the roadway is responsible for the inspection, and what I'd like to get is my thoughts clear on that. In the case of a railroad bridge, does that mean that the railroad oversees the inspection? And are they under the same kind of oversight that the highways are? And from what I understand, the information is merged into your same database. I happen to have the deficient bridge list here, and it talks about improvement costs and other things like that. Can you give me just some feel of how railroad bridges might be slightly different than roadway bridges, and especially those that have the rail going over the road?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, for railroad bridges, when they pass over MnDOT roadways or county roadways, as road authorities, we do inspect those bridges. The ownership, of course, often is the railroad itself. If we find any issues with the bridge, we will contact the railroad to ask them to correct whatever deficiencies that there may be. Some of the railroad bridges we actually own because we would have built them as part of an interstate system. So we're responsible at those times, but everything would need to be done with permission of the railroad. But I will have to admit I'm not familiar with the railroad's own practices as far as inspection. So our main concern is when the railroad passes over our roadway, we inspect. Mm-hmm. To make sure that we feel confident it is in good condition.
So one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorgan, for instance, I'm looking at one here that's a railroad. It says owner railroad, and it crosses over Bassett Creek. So is that something, and that's in the same database, is that something that the state has inspected for them, or they have given us the information?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I guess the particular bridge I'm not familiar with, if it's a railroad over a creek that's not related to a roadway, then I'm a little puzzled why it would be in the database. However, if there's a roadway involved, it may be over Bassett Creek plus another public road, in which case it would be in our database then. So I apologize, but I don't know the specifics on that one.
Thank you.
Mr. Dorgan, the bridges that the railroads inspect themselves, do their inspectors go through the same criteria as ours? They're certified and...
Senator Murphy, I'm not familiar with what the railroads, what the requirements that they adhere to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, our interest in railroad bridges is when they pass over our roadways for a public safety reason that we do our own inspections on those. But what they do themselves, I'm not familiar with that. And I think that varies between the railroads.
Well, Mr. Dorgan, I'm just thinking about in the future, I think that it would behoove us to put those bridges on our inspection list as well. They do cross waters of the state many times. We just had one collapse down in my district because of the flooding. We had another incident down in my district with a train and a bridge earlier in the year, and you know, those are waters of the state and waters of the people, and maybe, you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts at a later date as what we should be doing in the future to look at those bridges as well, because having a train, you know, loaded with ammonia, for example, go off in the Trimble Creek down in my district would not, I think all the fishermen between here and the Gulf of Mexico wouldn't be very happy.
Okay.
No further questions. Please go ahead with your presentation.
All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just had begun by describing the state requirements, federal requirements for bridge inspection, and these are dictated in the National Bridge Inspection Standards. The requirement there is actually a two-year inspection cycle. So Minnesota has always had a shorter schedule than the federal system. In addition, there are underwater inspections required as part of the National Bridge Inspection System. Those are on a five-year frequency. And the purpose of the underwater inspection is to look for those scour issues, which, as Senator Dibble correctly characterized before, is scour, where you're losing earth or support under the foundation. So that's what the purpose of the underwater inspections are, to confirm that the foundation is still solid, because obviously you can't inspect it from up above. So the diver gives us our opportunity to do that inspection. The other requirement from the federal system is for fracture critical inspections every 2 years. So this is that small subset of bridges that are deemed fracture critical, where there is a lack of redundancy because of the original design, and the failure of a C member could cause a failure of the structure. So those are required on a two-year cycle. And so Minnesota then, of course, adheres to the federal requirements also, but as I noted, our one-year cycle in the state is actually a stricter standard. From there, I'd like to briefly go through inspector training. It was asked, or actually Senator Murphy, I think, asked on the inspector training earlier. Inspectors now, to be a certified inspector in Minnesota, one must have gone through what's called a comprehensive bridge inspector training class that's approved by the Federal Highways. And that's a two-week course that's targeted, of course, it's wholly focused on bridge inspection. So that's part of the requirement, that you must have gone through that class. The other part is an experience requirement. If one is a professional engineer and is registered, then the combination of your engineering registration and completing the two-week class qualifies you as a certified bridge inspector. For non-engineers, the requirement is that they have also 5 years' experience related to bridge inspection, in addition to have attended the class. There is a testing at completion of that, a proficiency exam, so the students or the applicants for the certification go out on an actual bridge, do their evaluation, and a certified inspector would evaluate that person's rating of the bridge to confirm that they are truly understanding what the various condition codes mean.
Mm-hmm.
Within Minnesota, then, the number of inspectors we have that have gone through that and are certified bridge inspectors and considered team leaders, that's the federal terminology. So these people would be able to solely on their own inspect a bridge that they have the certification. There are 327 statewide. Of those, 75 are MnDOT employees. The rest would be either local government employees or consultants that support local government in bridge inspection. So there is a fairly large number of certified bridge inspectors then within Minnesota.
And Mr. Dorgan, now is everybody in your office a certified bridge inspector that goes out in these teams, or do you have one person that supervises the work of other folks that are not certified?
Chairman Murphy, the of the employees in the bridge office, no, not everyone is a certified bridge inspector. In fact, that's actually a fairly small subset. Understand our office covers preliminary and final design of bridges. We do quite a variety of activities. Bridge inspection is just a portion of that.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to defer to Mr. Neiman if he knows the count within our office that are certified bridge inspectors. It's a smaller group. And go ahead,
mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, members, we have four people within the bridge office that are certified team leaders that are involved with inspection, and that's everyone that's involved with inspection from the bridge office. But it is true that oftentimes that whether or not you're in a district or a city or county, you have assistant people working with a team leader to conduct an inspection. There may be two or three people involved, but one of them is a certified team leader. It's a federal requirement that they are present at all times during the course of the inspection.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Neiman, how many professionals other than the four team leaders? Excuse me? I'm sorry. How many professionals are there besides the four team leaders? Is that the 4 minus the 75 that you were talking about, Mr. Dorgan? Or
Senator Murphy, yes, there's 75 within MnDOT. Of those, 4 are in our office that actually do the inspection. And the rest would be out among our districts, our 8 districts.
Right, there would be some belong to District 6, District 7, District 8, and of the ones that are out in the field, now they're certified bridge inspectors, but they're not certified team leaders. I'm having a problem with the difference in...
Okay. The Chairman Murphy, the numbers I gave you, the 327 statewide, 75 mm-hmm. within MnDOT, all of those they're both certified bridge inspectors within Minnesota, and they're team leaders meeting the National Bridge Inspection requirements for team leaders.
Okay, and there's so 4 of them in your office in St. Paul, and then the rest are scattered out in the district offices.
Correct.
Okay. Good. Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering who does the training, if it's a federal agency or contractors or consultants, and then who does the testing? Is it a federal agency that oversees the test, or is it state? And then are the tests subjective or objective, or do they have both components?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the training is developed by the federal government, Federal Highway Administration, and is conducted through them. The certification practice is done within our office, and the proficiency test is done by us, by MnDOT.
Mr. Chair, are there objective and subjective measures? For example, do you take somebody out once they've done the 2-week course and have them inspect a bridge and then do a subjective evaluation? And also, like, is there a count of these are the things that you would have figured out and you got 17 out of the 25, or is it all subjective?
Yes, it is very quantitative. It is a practical test. On site, they do conduct an actual inspection, and that is it is graded by a system that we have of evaluation that we've determined a grading policy. If you miss this, you lose a couple points here, a couple points there. So yes, it is quantitative.
And finally, Mr. Chair, what percent does somebody have to have a passing score?
70%.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things this committee is trying to do is take a snapshot backwards from August back, and you would help me out if you could let us know, in terms of team leaders, certified bridge inspectors, what has been the trend over, say, the past 10 years in MnDOT? Have you increased the number of certified inspectors? Have they stayed the same? And if you would talk both about the central office and then the rest of the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the
this question has come up in the past few weeks. The data, we keep maintain a database of certified bridge inspectors. So if you are certified and current, we have that name in our database. And as I mentioned, right now there's 227. That database is constantly updated as people might retire and their certification lapses and they don't reapply it and they're removed from the database. As new ones get trained, they're added. So we don't have the ability to take a snapshot, you know, year by year and give you counts because, again, the database constantly gets updated. But as far as the numbers, I'm trying to remember when the certification program went into place. Maybe I'll just leave that one for Mr. Neiman if he recalls. Within our office, though, the number of certified inspectors, we developed a unit called our Fracture Critical Inspection Unit, and that was done in the 1990s. So up until that point, the bridge office itself, we did not have bridge inspection staff. It was all done in our district offices. So that's been an addition in recent years to the bridge office itself. And with that, I'll ask Scott if you remember when the certification program was put in place.
It was put in place long before I was involved. I don't have a particular year of when it was mm-hmm. it was established. But I would add that the proficiency exam, the practical test that we provide, is an additional requirement that we have over and above the federal requirement to identify and certify a bridge inspector.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up, maybe I can clarify the question. I understand within the central office you used to have a fracture critical unit, and now, right now, the number I understand in the central office is there are 4 certified bridge inspectors. That means there's 71 outside of the central office. I'm trying to get a sense from roughly when the certification started. I understand you don't know the year, but have we added bridge inspectors over the years? Has the number stayed the same within MnDOT? Has the number gone down in MnDOT?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and as I said earlier, the database is such, the numbers of certifications, it's constantly updated. So there isn't a way to go back and see where it's, to freeze it in time in 2005 or 2000 and see the numbers. But I think also maybe one misnomer that I'd like to correct here, bridge inspection is not a full-time job. So there isn't, we don't have an employee classification within MnDOT where your title is bridge inspector and that's all you do throughout the year. Bridge inspection is a responsibility that a number of people within the department, and as I mentioned, there's 75 team leaders, they do for a portion of the year. Some people may inspect bridges for 2 weeks a year. Another one may be inspecting bridges for 6 months a year. The inspection, and so they have other tasks that they're doing. They may be during the rest of the year, they may be a bridge worker, so they're out there actually doing repair work or preventive maintenance on bridges, and then there's a portion of their calendar through their year, the work calendar that's set aside to do inspection. So it's not, you know, we're not able to say there's so many employees that this is their full-time job, because that just is not the case.
That leads to all kinds of other questions. I think Representative Hornstein, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Durgan, and maybe one of those that may follow is, do you have data over time then about your budget? If these are not, you know, full-time jobs, et cetera, can you walk us through over time the budget for the Certified Bridge Inspector Program, both in the central and the district offices? How has that changed over time?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the budget, I do have data for the past 4 years, and what we track is the total expenditures on bridge inspection within MnDOT, and that has stayed pretty much at about $2.4 million per year as we look back over the past 4 years. So we do have that data. That's whether one calls that a budget, those are the actual expenditures for bridge inspection work.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Dorgan, in your experience, and you've been with MnDOT for quite a long time, has Has your office requested more funds to do more inspections, or do you, or maybe I should just ask you instead of that, do you see the need to do more inspections and have a larger budget?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as far as whether the office requested more, in the year that the fracture critical team was added, and I'm sorry I don't have that year, that would have been at least a decade ago. There was 98. Okay, thank you. Mr. Neiman recalled it was 1998. That was when those positions were added to the office. So there would have been a request back in that year to add positions specifically for fracture critical inspections. So that addition was made at that point. We have not, the staff that we had through our office and out through our districts, you know, we believe is adequate to handle the inspections required. As you can see, we have quite a few people trained at 75 team leaders across the state. There are more people than that assisting the team leaders that have taken the two-week class but are working towards becoming a team leader. So the workforce is greater than 75 that is doing these inspections. So we believe we have adequate staff to do it. Now, having said that, you know, given the scope of the catastrophe that Minnesota experienced and the review that will be done nationally, you know, we will have to see if additional requirements come from to the NBIS system or the forensics, you know, tells us to do something different. That may be a driver for increased inspection, but I think that's getting ahead of ourselves. We'll have to see how that develops.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask this question, Mr. Dorgan. Knowing what the condition of the state's bridges are in, and we need about $1 billion of investment just to fix the state bridges, and I'm asking you because you're the expert here, should we be spending more money to upgrade our bridges than what is currently in our budget if we are going to provide a safe bridge system for our constituents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think, Mr. Chairman, your question is larger than bridge inspection. It's the program as a whole.
Right. You're inspecting the bridges and seeing that there is this degradation going on say, let's just say Lafayette Bridge, because we know that is on the list to have some repairs. What I'm trying to find out is the problem more extensive than even I believe it is, and in your opinion, your professional opinion, should we be spending more on our bridges on maintenance and upkeep?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the expenditures, I'll take that in about three parts and first address bridge inspection. You know, I think the inspection efforts that we have had statewide have been adequate for the bridges in Minnesota and to assess those conditions. Not only MnDOT, but along with our county efforts, I think it's the appropriate level that we have been conducting those at. Maintenance, we have in recent years, and then I'll move to bridge maintenance. In recent years, we've actually increased the amount of preventive maintenance that we've done within MnDOT on our bridges, so that there's greater expenditures have been spent in the last year as compared to 4 or 5 years ago. That's gone up significantly. And that's probably a function of our system aging. Actually, it dates back to an effort the department has made to do more preventive maintenance. If we look back in the preceding 5 years, we've spent about, now moving on to our bridge construction program and the adequacy of our bridge construction and repair program, over the last 5 years, we've averaged about $80 million a year in bridge construction contracts. Those have either been replacement of bridges or repair of bridges. And that's not new bridges on new routes. These are all expenditures on the existing system, either for replacement or repair. Those levels over those years were the appropriate levels, and that was what we were projecting was necessary. As we look to the future, however,
those demands are going to increase because the system is aging. We built a lot of bridges in the 50s and 60s. $80 million is no longer going to carry us forward for those future years. And I think that has been recognized by all parties as part of the need for transportation funding, that additional funding is needed. The source, obviously, is often debated what the source will be, but nevertheless, the funding is needed there. So expenditures will have to increase, so the current revenue stream would not be adequate to fund those expenditures when we see what all the rest of the department needs to do.
Thank you. Representative Mador.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get back here to this database, and I'm understanding you have 327 people in a database. Those are not 75 of those people are hired by MnDOT, so they're MnDOT staff. The rest of them, the 252, are divided out amongst local government and then contractors and consultants. What worries me is that we have bridges such as the 35W bridge that went on this list with problems in 1993, and we're running the risk here of having contractors and consultants do the annual reviews of bridges like that. And I'm not going to ask you to specifically talk about the 35W bridge because I realize you probably don't have that information. But what I'm worried about is when I look at, for example, my own home, and I look at the soffits, and I say, oh, you know, there's a little bit of paint peeling there, but I think I can get away another year and maybe not paint that, which I've done. And then this year I look at it and I say, okay, now I have to fix this or I'm going to start having trouble with my roof. I can tell that there's been a significant change from last year to this year or 3 years ago to this year. Some of these bridges are 2 years. Explain to me the value of having consultants to do work that might not have the historical perspective on that piece of bridge. Explain to me the value of that when instead we should be having MnDOT staff that are hired out to a region, understand the weather, understand perhaps if there's a new farm. We've heard quite a bit in Mankato that we have new farm equipment for the ethanol plants running over these bridges. Explain to me the value of having a consultant to do work like that rather than hiring MnDOT staff, where you can get that historical perspective and be able to come back to you and say, I've noticed enough of a change, and I know the area enough that there's going to be significant changes that we need to change our pattern here of either inspections or maintenance.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, perhaps I didn't state it clearly before when I mentioned that of the 327 across the state, you know, a portion of those are MnDOT, a good number of those are local and county officials, and there are some consultants that are trained as team leaders also. MnDOT has done their bridge inspections with our own staff. Up until August 1st, we did our own inspections for bridges. I think the current contract, you know, to assist us with the statewide inspections and get them done by December, this was about the first time I recall that we hired outside expertise to do our routine inspections. Now, we have hired consultants at times to help us analyze the bridge, and of course, 35W itself had a number of contracts in that regard, but the inspections on those bridges were actually done by MnDOT personnel. Now, the consultants that are certified bridge inspectors usually serve local government. Most of the bridge inspections done by local government are done with their own forces, but at times they may have a person, their certified inspector may retire. It takes a while to get another person trained, and as I mentioned, that if you're not an engineer, it takes 5 years' experience. So some counties at times outsource some of their bridge inspections, and often they usually do it with the same consultant so that they do get that history, because as you pointed out, it's important that you don't have a new person every year out looking at the same thing, because they don't have a sense of what has changed over time or what the trend line is in the progression and deterioration. So, you know, it's a valid point you raise that it needs to generally be as much as possible the same eyes looking at it, and I think that's generally the practice.
So the 75, I guess I'm trying to understand then just how many employees you have, because you're telling, you're saying you have 75 MnDOT employees. You're telling me those 75 team leaders were responsible for going out and inspecting all the bridges? Or I'm trying to understand this. I'm confused by.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, the 75 team leaders collectively would inspect the bridges in their district or their area. As I mentioned, we have four within our office that are certified. They do fracture critical inspections for the districts and for counties. But the other 71 out in our district, they would lead the inspection of the bridges in their MnDOT district. And they would have assistants. They have other inspectors that are in training, achieving certification that aren't yet team leaders, would be assisting them at times. But those, the inspections would fall to those 71 across the state to do.
Just one more, Mr. Chair. And how many bridges are that then that they're responsible, these 71 people are responsible for inspecting or gathering information for?
There are, across the state, there are 30, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, within the MnDOT system, there are 3,800 bridges that are 20 foot and over that require inspection by the federal criteria, and there's an additional about 900 that are 10 to 20 foot that we also inspect as part of our state requirements and state statutes. So right around 4,700 bridges.
I think I need to digest that number for Mr. Chair. Thank
all
you.
Right. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Dorgan, generally the district inspects their own bridges with their own. But the other thing, are there more than two, do you have more than two statewide bridge maintenance crews, or you have one, or you have two, or how many do you have right now?
Okay.
Maintenance repair crews.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, with yes, each district, and I was just checking with Todd on the count, each of our MnDOT districts has a minimum of one bridge crew. Some have a larger number of crews. I think our metro area, and I'm working from memory, I believe it's five different bridge crews are within the metropolitan area. Almost half of our bridges are within the metro area, so that's the reason for a greater number of bridge crews in the metropolitan area. I know our Rochester district has at least two, they have two bridge crews. Some of our rural districts with smaller numbers of bridges, one bridge crew is how they are staffed. So that varies depending on the population of bridges within the district. So that there are certainly far more than one bridge crew. You know, that would give us a minimum of a minimum of 13 bridge crews, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorgan, I realize the district bridge crews are minor maintenance, but you basically only have two, or maybe you have more now, that would go statewide on major bridge repairs. I think the district are normally routine and minor repair kind of type, right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, actually the bridge crews that we have are all within the district, and they undertake some fairly significant repairs. So I guess I would not categorize it as minor repair work. They do both preventive maintenance, which is fairly minor work, making sure joints are replaced, that type of work. But also they do undertake major repairs. I mean, they will, and you're certainly familiar with the Red River Valley, they will jack a truck up and reset the bearings and do steel repairs. Often when there's bridge hits, when bridge hits occur, and they unfortunately occur frequently, it's our MnDOT bridge crews that make those corrections to the bridge. Our office would supply, if they need a design, to design what members need to be added or corrected, we would do the engineering and then they would install it themselves. So they undertake fairly significant work.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Mr. Dorgan, that's the specific duties year-round then. And normally that's a complement of two or three, and you pick up other maintenance people to help them. That's not a big crew, basically, in the district. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, the size of the crews varies. Most of the crews I'm familiar with are usually a 3-4-person crew, maybe a 5-person crew. So it's anywhere 3 to 5 employees would make up a bridge crew, depending on what that district's need is.
They would do bridge maintenance work throughout probably the good weather months. During the middle of winter, they may be doing some snow plowing when you can't be out there doing pouring concrete and that type of work. But they, but generally, they're working the better part of the year. They're doing the bridge maintenance work.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dorgan, earlier you said that most of the bridge inspectors only inspect for a very short time during the year. Some of them might inspect for 4 or 5 months, but generally the amount of inspection time that they book is a matter of weeks, not months. And now, when somebody puts their time in, a regular person who is cross-trained to be a bridge inspector, a snowplow driver, a bridge maintenance worker, where do they book the majority of their time? Is it in the maintenance field, fixing the bridges? Is it in the inspection area? Or is it in something else, plowing snow, for example?
Mr. Chairman, I'll have to just speak from budget-wise on how expenditures are done on bridges, and to try to give you a sense of that, because I think it varies so much between workers across the state as to how much time they would do on bridge inspection. And, you know, I use as an example maybe a district with a small number of bridges. Maybe with their team of inspectors, they can get all their inspections done within a few weeks. Whereas others may spend the better part of the year doing it. So of the 75 people, that varies how much time they're spending on bridge inspection versus other mm-hmm. duties they have. For the four we have within the bridge office, those people are pretty much 100% on inspection. Now, you can't inspect, you can't get the snoopers and our equipment running in December and January because of cold weather, but that's the portion of the year when they're doing their reports and finishing up their field reports from the previous year. So that's just an example of people that are fairly dedicated, almost 100% to bridge inspection. So again, that varies. But as far as expenditures, in 2007, our expenditures on maintenance work, so we're either doing preventive maintenance or what we call reactive maintenance, where they're going out repairing a deficiency, we spent about $9 million, just over $9 million were charged to those items. Our bridge inspection during that same period was about $2.2 million. So if that gives you a sense, I think you're asking how much time might be done maintenance mm-hmm. work versus inspection. Mm-hmm. I would say that's roughly equivalent to hours spent, maybe.
Well, Mr. Dorgan, help me with this. You say you spent $9 million on maintenance last year. Is that just maintenance in the metro area, or is that statewide?
Mr. Chairman, that would be statewide bridge maintenance. That would be bridge maintenance only, mm-hmm. so it doesn't include the roadway maintenance.
Well, Mr. Dorgan, now I understand your statement earlier that in the future years we're going to have more money to do this, because there's $1 billion of, according to the documentation that we received back during the regular legislative session, there's over $1 billion of state bridge maintenance work that needs to be done, and about $790 million worth of local bridges that need to be fixed. So it does look like that $9 million is going to have to go to the north someplace. Representative Hortman and Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Dorgan, you had a
yes.
comment?
Yes. Senator Murphy, if I may respond to that last. I think the numbers, and those sound very close, what you they sound very accurate, what you provided there. But that was the projected needs in bridge replacement and repair. So that would have been contract work to actually go out and replace an entire bridge when you cited the $1 billion and I think the 700 and some million on the local system. So that's replacement of structures. And I'm sorry if I confused you. I was talking about the maintenance effort, which is in trying to keep those separate, because we have an inspection effort, a maintenance effort, and then also we do bridge replacements and repair via contract.
So those large dollars that she cited were the numbers needed for replacement or reconstruction of bridges. So that's different than maintenance and inspection.
And that is that part of your budget as well, Mr. Dorgan, or is that part of the overall MnDOT budget?
Senator Murphy, that would be part of MnDOT's overall construction budget. So the money to replace bridges or do contract repairs would come out of our construction budget.
All right, thank you. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on the question that you asked about whether you feel that you have enough funds to do what you need to do in the bridge inspection office. If I'm tracking right, you divided your answer into three areas. Inspections, you spend $2.2 million to $2.4 million a year. Maintenance, you spend $9 million a year. And bridge construction and repair, you spend $80 million a year. So it looks like about $91 million a year. And my question is, I understand that the goal for good bridges dropped from, I believe it was 60% to 55%. And so I guess I would like you to talk a little bit more about the budget question in terms of, are you getting all the inspections done on time, on the schedule that you have? Are you able to do all the maintenance that you think needs to be done? And are you able to do all the bridge construction and repair that those inspection reports are telling you need to be done in each year? Or is there a gap between what you ideally would like to do with performance standards and what you're actually able to do? And then after you talk about that, if there is a gap, do you submit a request, a budget request to the commissioner for consideration, and then she looks that over before she puts the budget together that we see? I guess I'm just, with the drop in the standards, I'm a little confused about how it could be that we have the budget that we need.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, maybe first let me address what's been described as the drop in the standards. In 1997, MnDOT established performance measures. And at that time, the performance measure for bridges was actually to keep 65% of the bridges in good condition, and the good actually is in National Bridge Inspection. That would be certain condition codes would actually translate to good condition. And then 2% in no more than 2% in poor. So in between there is other conditions of satisfactory and fair, but those weren't addressed with the measures. As the years progressed and we looked at those measures, we introduced new measures. One was we want to have no more than 16% of our bridges in the combination of fair and poor condition. But you're correct, we also did change the target on the bridges in good condition, and that was moved from 65% to 55%. And at the time that was done, it was done, and that was actually a proposal from the bridge office itself. As we looked at the data, we realized that the target that was set in 1997 was done at a time with the bridge conditions at the time, we had about 61% in good condition. So they set a target that had a slightly higher bar, but we realized in order to achieve it, we would actually have to be prematurely replacing bridges in order to do that, because the total number of bridges in poor condition in the state is just about 4%. So even if we replace all of those, that would not give us enough numbers to achieve that 65% target. So we reevaluated that. We looked at the situation nationally, obtained data from federal highways on what percentage of the inventory was in good condition as we looked at the other 49 states. And the average there was in about the middle 40s. Somewhere, I think, 43 to 45% were actually in good condition when we looked at other states. So based on that, we reevaluated our target and set the new threshold at 55%. Is the target we want to achieve. And we actually, in the early, just past the year 2000 or so, we were actually dropping below 55% in the recent, since about the last 3 years, we've been raising that level, so we're up close to 55%. We haven't quite achieved it yet. Mm-hmm. So that was the target issue, but I know there was quite a bit more to your question, and I'll have to apologize. I've forgotten the rest of your question, and
I'll try to quit asking complex questions. With regard to the standard, I always prefer that Minnesota is above average. So
it's great to know where the other states are, but whenever we can choose, I hope we choose above average. With regard to the other parts of the budget, inspections, maintenance, bridge construction, and repair, so what you're saying is that all of our, I want to know, are our inspections done on the schedule that's set out? Are the maintenance things that are requested to be done or recommended to be done from the inspections being done on the schedule that they are suggested? And then on the bridge construction and repair, are the construction and repair activities being done on the schedule that they're requested or recommended?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the inspections are being accomplished on the schedule that was recommended, and that's also set by statute and also by federal requirements. So we are achieving those. The maintenance, as far as preventive maintenance, we actually identified a shortfall of about $1 million in our preventive maintenance program that we hope to address in future years. So although we've increased our maintenance expenditures significantly, in 2004 we were spending about $4.5 million. We've made a request for a higher, and that's part of our overall focus of the department on preventive maintenance, so we've raised that to over $9 million in 2007, so that doubled in 4 years. Even with that, we did project that we could use another million in preventive maintenance. So there's a shortfall there of ever so slight. We still see some more maintenance that could be done. On the bridge replacement, and then I believe that was maybe the last part of your question, as I testified earlier, we have been achieving targets in past years. However, there's been a lot of inflation in the last couple of years in bridge costs, so we do need to put more money into replacements in future years. So there definitely is more funding needed in future years for bridge replacement and repair. And a lot of that's a function of the age of our inventory.
And, Mr. Dorgan, future years would be like in 2008?
I'd have to review. I'm sorry, Senator Murphy, I don't have the 2008 program in front of me, so I'd have to take a check on that to see 2008. But
Mr. Dorgan, kind of where I'm getting at is that, you know, we know that there's a backlog of a lot of bridges that do need to be replaced or have some pretty substantial maintenance. If those monies were provided starting, say, August 1st of 2008, and your budget went from $90 million a year to, say, I think something more along the line of $250 million a year, knowing that, you know, Lafayette Bridge is probably more expensive than an I-35W bridge, are you going to be able to spend that money?
Mr. Chairman, well, we certainly welcome the challenge
if
the funds were available. We would be able to spend the money. I couldn't promise in a year because of project development reasons,
right.
But if there are some significant bridges that we're currently planning to replace, Lafayette's one of them,
mm-hmm.
Interstate 90, the Dresbach Bridge is another,
right.
Those will consume a lot of dollars. So
mm-hmm.
So if additional funds was available and the department was able to get the project development done, we would like mm-hmm. to replace those. So there are needs out there, and that's been recognized as future needs. That was one of the reasons the department is setting aside, it's a statewide bridge fund where we're setting aside so many dollars a year for major bridges, because it would be difficult often for our districts to, particularly an example is Dresbach in District 6. That is such a high cost structure that
mm-hmm.
would consume all of the district's budget in that year, or
mm-hmm.
a very large portion of the district's budget, I should say. So we are trying to, we've developed a central fund to help
mm-hmm.
help our districts replace those bridges. But more funds could certainly be utilized in future
mm-hmm.
years.
Both, Mr. Dorgan, we've got a list of questions. We've got Representative Leader, Senator Carlson, Salzman, Dibble, and then Langstaff. This is just my last question, so the public is a little aware. Can you explain the process of reimbursement on these river crossings into Packerland, like the Dresbach Bridge? I mean,
Who pays, basically?
Senator Murphy, members of the committee, there are a number of bridges over both the St. Croix and Mississippi that we own jointly with the state of Wisconsin. We have the same situation with the state of North Dakota and also the province of Ontario. So when we jointly own the bridge, a decision is made between the states as to who will take the lead and move that project along, and then we each pay 50% of the cost from end of bridge to end of bridge. So the roadways coming up to it are each of the responsibilities of the respective state, but the bridge itself is split 50-50. So we reimburse Wisconsin. When they take the lead, they reimburse us when we take the lead.
Representative Leader, then Senators Carlson, Salzman, Dibble, and then Langseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorgan, it appears to me that if we don't have the funds and don't address those major projects, that you really don't have plans laying in a drawer. And all of a sudden, we'll be faced with the same situation as we have with I-35W, and we're going to go to a design build. Can you respond to the question? Do you have enough staff and professional staff that you actually, if we gave you money, could get into the design process, or do you have to leave everything else lay when you get a major structure under contract and we're going to be faced with design build every time we get a major structure?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, for our major structures, some we design with our own in-house staff. An example of that would be like the 35E bridge replacement that occurred a few years ago. That was done by our in-house staff. But a bridge the size of Lafayette and Dresbach consumes, all those projects consume a lot of our staff. So often we hire consultants to assist us. But, you know, that doesn't speak, Representative Leader, to your question on design build. You know, the department would have a choice whether we want to proceed a traditional method we'd hire a consultant, obtain a final plan, and then just go to contract with a traditional design, bid, build versus a design build. You know, they're both vehicles to deliver the project. At the moment, both Dresbach and Lafayette are being developed. We're in preliminary design. So the outcome from that, we can move then into final design and to deliver as traditional, or if there was a reason to change that and go design build, one could also go design build. So the decision really hasn't been made as to how those are being delivered.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
All right, Senator Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Dorgan. Moving back, way back to the staffing level, again, you said there's 75 certified bridge inspectors. I actually have three questions. I want to get them all in this time here. First of all, I want you to verify, you said that there were no contract inspections before August 1st. I just want you to verify that. And then secondly is the count of your inspectors that have gotten their certification through being a licensed professional engineer and getting it through their experience route. And then also, what is the staffing of your inspection crews? Do you have more than one certified individual that's on those crews when they go out?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, or I'm sorry, Senator Carlson.
We look a lot alike.
Okay. As far as no contract inspection prior to August 1st, the only inspections I'm aware of, in the 1990s, I think there was an inspection on Blatnik as part of the repair contract, where Blatnik is a bridge up over the harbor in Duluth. I think we hired the company at the time that designed the repairs to go out and also inspect it, or they did some inspection, I believe, beforehand. But, you know, generally, that was one of the exceptions. And there may be a few, there may be another one I'm not recalling, but generally inspections for MnDOT bridges are done by MnDOT personnel. The exception, of course, August 1st, because of the compressed time frame, we were unable to achieve the December 1st date without hiring outside help. And then there's the desire for the process review as part of that, too. So I think that would be your first question.
Mm-hmm.
Your second question, I'm sorry, but of the 75 MnDOT certified inspectors, we'll have to go back and check how many would be engineers versus how many are non-engineers. I don't know those counts offhand. I believe your third question then was how many certified inspectors would be out on an inspection. I would say that would depend on the bridge. There needs to be a team leader out there, a certified inspector participating in the inspection. we generally, in the field, like to always have two people out there just for safety reasons. You know, you hate to have somebody out there by themselves. So for a smaller structure, that could be one certified team leader and another assistant inspector that's working towards certification. Our major bridges, when we do like fracture critical inspections of like the Hastings Bridge, that was when we do that, a number of the people out there doing the inspections are all certified team leaders. So we'd have multiple team leaders out there at the time, but obviously you'd have somebody overseeing this would take the lead for the day organizing it all. So I don't want to have the confusion of too many chiefs, but you might have multiple team leaders, certified inspectors participating in that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think Senator Saltzman was next.
Yes, on your point earlier, that on the ask, Mr. Chair, I guess Representative Hartman brought this up about the standards, and that you have reevaluated the standards and have lowered them in terms of the number of bridges. If you were a school district, you could not get away with that. I am concerned that we talk about accountability and we talk about raising the bar and having higher standards and, you know, here in this state, and yet when it comes to perhaps the safety of the traveling public, it's okay to lower the standards. So I will go back to an earlier statement that you made, that you said the existing system is adequate in terms of our bridge construction dollars. Is that correct? You said that we have $80 million right now, and the existing system is adequate. Is that your correct statement?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, that level of expenditure in the preceding years was what we predicted was needed during those years. And so that, you know, that was based on the condition of the inventory and also with the expectation of additional expenditures in future years. As the future years go, that level will have to rise. And so, you know, that was the intent of my testimony.
So a follow-up question, Mr. Chair, if I may. For the residents who live in Hastings who drive across that bridge, and we see the pictures from underneath that bridge, that we're supposed to say that's okay, that we didn't need to fix that bridge at this time, because I'm being told by people that when they see those pictures that it's fear, that it is fear-mongering, and the public should be aware of what the bridges look like that they drive over. And if that bridge is adequate, we have a major problem in this state.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, the Hastings Bridge, I'm not sure which photo you're referring to, but there is corrosion on the floor beams below the deck.
Mr. Dorgan, I saw the pictures. I could stick my head through those beams and not scrape my ears.
Senator Murphy, that photo, what it showed, if we were thinking of the same photo, what that photo showed was a paint failure where a large sheet of paint had come off. That photo was taken from the ground. There is no hole, and if we're speaking of the same photo, you know, from the vantage point it was taken, it appeared to be a hole, or at least the photographer it did. It was not. Again, if we're speaking of the same photo that I'm thinking of, that was a paint failure where part of the paint system had fallen off of that floor beam. And that's exactly the work that was scheduled for next year on the Hastings Bridge. So we've had that project scheduled for a while to go in and repaint those areas. The bridge has been inspected. It has been measured for what we call section loss. So we look over those areas where corrosion occurs, and an actual measurement is done. You knock off the loose rust, and you take a measurement to see how thick is the steel, and you compare it to the original steel. And there is no significant section loss on that structure. So, and I realize that photo that, again, if we're thinking of the same photo, there was a photo being passed around. It was deceptive. So,
well, Mr. Dorgan, this was a huge blow up. I mean, it was almost 6 feet by 4 feet, and I believe one of the Washington County commissioners took the picture herself. If it wasn't that your understanding, Or it was somebody on her staff that took
somebody
the pictures?
Somebody on her staff, Mr. Taylor, or someone from the community took the pictures, my understanding, and took a series of pictures. So it's not just one picture. It's a number of pictures that are very concerning to that community because I think that this is where we go to the public trust. And they're concerned, and to hear some people say that that's adequate, that that's acceptable, to some of us, it's not acceptable. And that's where we're having a problem finding compromise, is what's safe, what's adequate, what should we be fixing, and what should we be saying can wait until who knows when. We don't even know when we're going to have money for some of these projects. The date just continues. But that's another discussion. But I raise this in terms of the inspections. I raise this point because it seems that we are lowering the standards. And I hear repeatedly that in Minnesota we need to have higher standards. When we start accepting lower standards in this state, whether we start with our infrastructure or we start with any area of our economy, we're going down the wrong road.
Mr. Dorgan, we'll try to get those pictures that the Washington County Commissioner had and get them over to you. You may very well be right. When I saw the pictures, I was taken aback, put it that way. We're going to go now to Senator Dibble, then Langseth, and then we're going to entertain a motion, and then we're going to adjourn. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. My question also picks up on Representative Portman's line of inquiry. It has to do with those key measures that she's talking about. I do think we need to hear more, and maybe we don't need to hear more now. Maybe you can provide some of the written rationale that went into lowering the key measure, you know, the goal in that key measurement tool from 65 to 55%. And another question I have is, and I think you touched on this as well, the good. The fair and the poor bridges, a number was more recently lumped together and reported out as one number, so it's a little hard to distinguish between the fair and the poor. Well, it was in the report that I don't have that document with me. I don't know if it's distinguished somewhere else, but fair and poor bridges were lumped together and reported as one number, and I'm wondering why we do that. I mean, if you don't do that in another document, why then do it in a document that's available for legislators and public consumption.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, and I guess I did not explain that well then. We are still measuring the poor measures that we still have the poor measure and are reporting that annually. We introduced another measure that is a combination of fair plus poor as a new target. And one of the reasons for doing that is generally it's the bridges in fair and poor condition are the ones that you're addressing with your construction or with your replacement program or your contract repair program. So it was important to us to put a limit on how large a population could be in that combination of fair and poor, because the larger it gets, the higher the demand on your replacement and repair program and the higher your need for funding. So that is introduced several years ago as we learned more about measures that we introduced in 1997. We introduced that as a third measure. We're still tracking the number of goods, but also realize as we discuss the measures, if you compare Minnesota to the rest of the country, and I'd urge you to do that, there'll be the latest in November every year, Better Roads Magazine comes out with their publication of how many deficient bridges. Minnesota consistently ranks in the top 10 there. We're usually about number 5. I don't have it in front of me, but we're usually about number 5 in the country in the terms of fewest number of deficient bridges. So when you compare us nationally, our level of condition well exceeds the national average. So, you know, that was taken into consideration also as we set measures and also as we readjusted measures or introduced new measures. So there, you know, I don't want it to be misunderstood that we're somehow lowering our standards, because our standards are considerably higher than what we're trying to achieve in the rest of the country.
Well, Mr. Dorgan, that doesn't give me much assurance on the next trip to Memphis. If we have some of the best bridges in the United States and one of ours fell down, I kind of wonder what the condition is on the bridges all across the country. Maybe that's why Missouri already moved to pass a huge bridge package to fix their bridges. Is that kind of your take on Missouri's maneuver?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Missouri's number of deficient bridges is considerably larger than Minnesota's, I believe. My recollection, Missouri on the trunk highway system has about 2,800 deficient bridges. We have about 360. So, you know, they have a considerably either older inventory, I'm not sure what is happening, but they have a far higher need than we do. Mm-hmm. That's not to say we do not have needs, and you know, we're not complacent about the fact that we need to spend money on this. But I think also, Senator Murphy and members of the committee, there seems to be some presumption that condition was the cause here. I think we need to wait until the NTSB investigation and the rest of the forensic investigation is complete, because I think at this time that's very speculative, and you know, presuming something that we need for the investigation to be completed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Dorgan, I don't think my comment was directed that the reason the I-35 bridge fell down was lack of maintenance. You know, the jury's still out on that. I think what this committee is trying to look at is, are we in jeopardy of having another bridge fall down because of lack of maintenance or something else that we could be doing, and collectively. And that's, I believe, why this committee is here. And there's going to be tough questions asked in the weeks and months to come, Mr. Dorgan, and I would hope that your agency or your department understands that we have, as legislators, a responsibility to ask those difficult questions. And I think that, you know, you've kind of gotten a flavor today where we're at, and I think that Senator Langseth and Representative Morrill have a couple more questions here before we leave. But just so you know, and we've talked privately, that I feel that your agency has done a remarkable job with the resources that you have available. I have looked at a lot of these national trade magazines that and journals that show that Minnesota, when it comes to bridges, are, you know, we're at the front of the pack as doing a good job. So, Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, recently I talked to a citizen of Morocco. He said that before he went back, he wanted to come down here and view the bridge that went down. He wasn't going to any other state. He was going to stay in Minnesota and view this spectacular thing he had heard about over in Morocco. But I think, sort of a general statement, but the DOT does I wouldn't say a good job, they do a job of talking about dollars. And we spent more dollars than ever before in history. I was chairman of, in your place, Mr. Chair, for 14 years, and I've been chairman of the bonding committee, and I know a little bit about what's happened to construction costs. Steel and concrete have gone clear through the roof. You know, in 98, we had a $990 million bonding bill. If next year we passed $1.01 billion, they would say the biggest in history, and it will probably be doing about 60% of what we did in 1990. So I think the public really gets deceived a lot when they hear about these number of dollars. You know, I've heard that the 20-cent gas tax passed in 19 years ago is now the equivalent of 12. So I think it isn't good enough to just talk about dollars. We've got to be talking about what we accomplish with what the revenues we have. And I've been very involved in the local bridges because of the bonding, and we have done quite a lot. We've always been way, way above what the administration is as far as what we request there, and we tend to get what we want. But I do think we have to look at what it is we're doing rather than how many dollar bills we're spending.
Right. Thank you. Representative Morrow, I hate to cut this off because the debate is, it looks like it's just starting to get more lively, kind of like how I like it. But we do have to respect people's time and represent them more.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this very short. Representative Portman asked earlier, trying to understand the budget process. Let's just focus on the $80 million for construction. Does your office come up with that number and then pass that along to another group or individual to be approved? The other part of that would be, what do you anticipate that number moving to as we move forward from the $80 million?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the $80 million represents an average over the last 5 years. We've averaged about $80 million a year in bridge replacement and repair. The actual number, you know, oscillated some in there. I think there were some years we hit in excess of $120 million in bridge replacement and repair, and the next year we might have been at 60 or something like that. But so that's a five-year average. But to your question as to, I think it's who recommends or who decides upon that level, we have engineers within our office that work with our district to look at the condition of bridges, to establish what bridges should be upcoming for either replacement or repair. That is provided to the districts, and then they incorporate that information into their district construction budget. So that's the budgeting process that the department goes through. So we're working in conjunction with the districts. The budget for construction, however, is their budget. We don't have construction dollars assigned to our office that we disperse.
I guess what I'm asking are the engineers told you've got $80 million or $100 million this year, how do we divide it? Or do they come up with this is what we need to do this year and they cost $120 million that gets passed up the line to be approved, changed?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the process would be the engineers and those involved would identify what projects, and they're programming out a number of years, 4 or 5 years out. Well, the statewide transportation improvement plan is a 4-year time frame. So they're putting projects in as they see them in the future or even in a longer term program for replacement with more an eye towards what the need is rather than what the budget is. So then once the need's established, those needs, the construction budget is looked at. And obviously, we're trying to address as many of those needs as possible. And the emphasis that we have been given is to address our preservation needs first, which would be replacement or repair of bridges along with pavement needs. So that's what the department is trying to focus on, is addressing the current infrastructure.
Mr. Chair, your expertise, sir, would help me. Where might this $80 million average go as we move forward in the future for bridge preservation?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, well, it will definitely go up, and I'd have to look. I didn't bring those numbers with me, but I believe we were somewhere $125, $130 million a year, looking 15 years out, but that was in dollars of a couple years ago. So as Senator Langseth correctly pointed out, inflation has eroded the dollar quite a bit, so those numbers may even be higher when we hit those future years.
Well, on that note of good news,
can I?
Oh yeah, Mr. Dorgan, please.
Senator, and just wanted to take a moment and I, as I defended our maintenance, let me say this: we have very dedicated bridge inspection and maintenance staff, and so please understand my defense of what they do is. I think they are doing the very best they can.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the reason for the question. The fact that Minnesota may sit among the top in the nation in terms of bridge condition certainly doesn't explain 35W. So we understand the question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not offended at all by those. I mean, we've been asking. I just want you to let you know within our agency, those of us involved in bridges have been asking those very same questions to ourselves as to what we need to do to go forward. So it's more than yourselves, although I appreciate the questions because at times that may trigger us to think of an area that we hadn't thought about in the past. So I don't want it to be misread that the questions are not appreciated. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Jordan, along that line, I think that you would be remiss in your duties if you didn't stand up for your employees, and I appreciate you having the backbone to do that. You know, a lot of other people probably would have cut and run by now, but you hung in there, and that's to be respected. I believe that Senator, before I call on Senator Dibble, I just want to say that we as legislators all bring a certain area of expertise to the table. You know, the person to my right here is an engineer and understands a lot of these issues when we talk about road and bridge construction. I look around the table and we have, you know, we have farmers, businessmen and women. You know, I weld by trade. You know, so we have a lot of different expertise. But I don't believe that you know, we're policy makers, decision makers, and we need a level of expertise in this committee, and we need a level of expertise and understanding of bridges, transportation issues in general, and I believe that this committee needs some help. We need to hire some help someplace along the line to help us glean more information from the department, not only from the bridge area, but from other construction areas of MnDOT. And I think that many of us have talked about that openly, that you know, we aren't experts in this area, and I feel, and I believe that Chair Leader feels the same way, that we need to have some help as a committee to get our arms around this, because we could sit and ask questions all day of Mr. Dorgan or whoever else that we brought in front of the committee, and we probably wouldn't get to the crux of what it is that we need to make a good decision. And that's why at this time I would like to entertain a motion from Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So now I don't have to go through all that. So my motion would be to request that leadership would establish a working group from members of this committee that would compose of it at least the chairs, at least representation from the minority party, and leadership themselves, in order to work with them to hire outside professional assistance to authorize funding if that's needed, and establish a regular reporting and accountability plan. If we do hire someone from outside professional help, establish the work plan, the timeline, and the timeliness of reporting back to this full committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, maybe someone could help me out, but since we aren't in session, I don't believe that we can take actual action.
Mm-hmm.
Committee. And we're not, we're not a standing committee. You know, this group is not a standing committee,
mm-hmm.
So I'm not so sure that we can, I mean, we could make a suggestion, but I don't know if we can pass a motion to do that, but I think we can pass on our suggestion to leadership to do that.
Let's pass it anyway.
Mr. Chair, we're in fully. Okay.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, we are an interim committee. We've been authorized by an action of the Rules Committee. I think they've taken appropriate action in the House as well, so mm-hmm. we have the ability to pass a motion. And,
yeah.
You know,
maybe we can ask Mr. Dorgan, I appreciate you and Mr. Neiman being here today, and we'll let you know when the next meeting is, and of course you're invited to come back, and we'll probably have some more questions. We might even lob the softball to you from time to time. But if we could have Mr. Watson come to the table and kind of help us through Senator Fischbach's concern. Thanks again, Mr. Dorgan.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And Senator Fischbach, we're just asking leadership to try to give us a hand here on how to get our hands around this. And as a committee, we do need to have the ability to make motions and recommendations and things. But Mr. Watson, maybe you can help us with the administrative part of this request.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Peter Watson. I'm Senate counsel. Both the House rules and the Senate rules authorize the leadership to appoint committees for a variety of purposes. In the House, that power resides with the Speaker. In the Senate, that power resides with the Subcommittee on Committees of the Committee on Rules and Administration. The Speaker has appointed this group of House members, and the Subcommittee on Committees has appointed this group of Senate members to serve as a joint committee to address this issue. So it is a duly appointed committee acting under the rules of the Senate and the House.
But Mr.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Watson, can we actually take action when we are not in session?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, if you were to be trying to take action on a bill that had been introduced in the 2007 session and referred to, say, the Transportation Committee, no, this group would not have authority to act on a bill that had been referred to the Transportation Committee. The House or the Senate Transportation Committee could take action on that bill during the interim between sessions, but this group could not. But I don't believe that you're contemplating taking action on a bill. I think you're contemplating, in this case, requesting your leadership to come up with some money and arrange a process for selecting some staff. And you will be later deciding what it is you will be doing, your process for gathering the information that your charge established by the Subcommittee on Committees and the Speaker has been given to you. So within the scope of what you have been appointed and assigned to do, yes, motions are definitely in order.
Right. Okay. Mr. Chair, Mr. Watson, I just wanted to be clear on what we were able to do, because there's lots of committees that that we don't know all the time exactly what they are able to do and what things they're able to pass.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Senator Fischbach. I know that, you know, there's been a lot of question lately about, you know, different processes that we have here, the LAC, for example, and what we've been going through with trying to juggle the money for the I-35W bridge and whether or not we have statutory authority to do that. Those questions are still being kind of fleshed out a little bit, and I'm sure in the next few days we'll have a better understanding on what's going to happen with that. Is there further discussion on the Dibble motion? Do all the members understand what it is that we're asking leadership to do, Representative Portman?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would add is that I would hope that we would act in an expeditious manner to get the assistance that we need to move forward.
Mr. Chair, I'll amend my motion to add the word expeditiously at the end.
Very good.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Watson?
Just one other procedural point, that this has been appointed as a joint committee to be working together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conference committee, so that voting within this joint committee is by a majority of the whole body. It's not by a majority of each side voting separately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an interim commission. It's mm-hmm. not like a conference committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Watson. And just so the public is very aware, what we're contemplating doing here is to hire some extra staff so that they can do a lot of the footwork that we actually don't have time to do. And on top of that, the decisions that this committee makes, and I believe that Representative Leader feels the same way, the decisions that we make or the findings that we make, we want them to be on a bipartisan basis, and we want this whatever we call it, special counsel, whatever leadership comes to term the group that's going to be put together to help us with this, that we want it to be a bipartisan basis so that the information that we use is above reproach. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, in support of the Dibble motion, I mean, we have a very important charge here, and I think it's to make sure that this kind of thing never, ever happens again in the state of Minnesota. And so to get the resources, to get the job done right, expeditiously, as Representative Portman says, is a very good thing. So I appreciate, Senator Dibble, your motion.
Mm-hmm. On the Dibble motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, please watch your email. We'll come out with another committee hearing soon. I think that we need the answers from leadership as soon as possible. So with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.